You're listening to Retail Gets Real, brought to you by the National Retail Federation. Join us for a look inside the world's largest and most interesting industry. And now your host, Bill Thorne.
Welcome to Retail Gets Real, where we talk about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. I'm Bill Thorne from the National Retail Federation, and I'm joined today by my co-host, my friend and my colleague, Sarah Rand. Hello, Sarah.
Hello, friend.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you this morning?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing really well because we have a very, very interesting program coming up. We're going to be talking about something near and dear to the heart of the National Retail Federation, our members in the industry. And we've got somebody with us that can speak with a lot of authority to this issue. And that's Sucharita Kodali, who is a retail analyst for Forrester. Hello, Sucharita.
Hi, how are you? Thank you so much for having me.
So, Sucharita, the State of Retailing Online 2018. What is this report?
So the State of Retailing Online is an annual survey of retailers, in particular, the online divisions of various retailers that are members of NRF. And it basically has benchmarks on their performance and their digital investments. We've done this report slash survey for over 10 years in a partnership between NRF and Forrester. So we have some great time series information, but it's basically a state of how companies are investing in digital, what kinds of numbers they're seeing, and where they are leaning into.
Sucharita, why in the world are you doing this study? Because as we all know, retail is dying.
So not true.
Thank
so
you.
So not true. The myth of the retail apocalypse. We've got to crush it now.
Thank you. We're working on that every day. So in this particular study, was there anything, any key takeaways that differentiated from studies in the past?
There were two things. One is from a content standpoint. This particular study looked a lot more at store investment. So historically, State of Retailing Online has always been about just the e-commerce site and what types of merchandising tactics work on an e-commerce site or marketing tactics or what sort of fulfillment expenses may a retailer be seeing through their online retail sales channel. What's different here is that we looked a lot more at what type of in-store digital investments retailers were making, some of the back-end investments that they were making in the physical store that did have some kind of a digital component to it. And the second piece is from a surprising standpoint or from a different standpoint that actually surfaced in the data is that for the last several years, we've asked questions about mobile commerce, and the mobile commerce numbers have historically grown a lot, double digit, sometimes triple digit year over year. And what is interesting about this year is that there was not as much of a delta between the 2016 and 17 numbers for one particular metric, which was penetration of mobile commerce as a percent of e-commerce, which I thought was interesting because it suggests that we may be reaching an upper limit, really, with respect to mobile commerce transactions in the United States.
What do you attribute that to?
We have separate data from consumer surveys that we do at Forrester. So as you know, the State of Retailing Online is a retailer survey. And what we did is I supplemented it with consumer data. And the consumer data actually says that shoppers are still purchasing on their desktops. It's more convenient. It's easier. They feel safer. So that, I think, is really the primary reason for the difference. There are as many consumers in the U.S. that have access to desktops and laptops as there are that have mobile phones. And when given the choice between transacting on the two devices, consumers actually seem to prefer purchasing on their desktop where possible. Now, of course, there are exceptions to that. And on mobile devices, there are certain types of transactions, often transactions on the go or transactions that may be really, really important to do from a specific location, like an Uber transaction or like ordering an Uber car. And that's where mobile, the smartphone, really dominates from a commerce standpoint. But what we're seeing is that for a lot of larger ticket purchases or considered purchases where consumers may want to look at different images or think about the transaction or research it more in depth, the phone isn't always the best place to complete that transaction. It's often an easy place to get some information, but you have that device switching that happens where the larger screen ultimately captures the transaction. And sometimes even you have the transaction, of course, happening in a physical store because the phone isn't adequate for that type of a transaction either.
One of the things you discuss in the report, it's titled basically, retailers are headed in the right direction, but must still overcome big obstacles. What are those obstacles, Sucharita?
There are a number of challenges. A lot of it has to do with just getting executive buy-in, for instance, with respect to their digital initiatives. And those require budgets. There can sometimes be basics with respect to even getting products right and accurate product content on websites. One of the biggest areas of investments that we heard retailers tell us about in this survey was that they're investing in product information management systems. And it's actually surprising that it's taken until 2018 for a lot of companies to even get there. So there are a number of just basics that companies still seem to need to get in place and get right before they can truly make the most of their digital strategies. We've been talking as an industry about omnichannel, for instance, for as long as I can remember. And when you look at the data, more than half of the retailers surveyed don't even have features like buy online, pick up in store yet to this day. So there are a lot of things that still need to be tackled that retailers really need to address because these are essentially industry standards at this point.
The report covers overall retailers investing in digital and technology. What kind of trends were you seeing in terms of technology investment in the store?
A lot of it is to help, for instance, task management of store associates. So that's definitely one area that we see greater heat in, is that just that ability to make the store associate more efficient and to make the store a better run and more enjoyable place to shop. From a consumer-facing standpoint, we're seeing some investments in areas like self-checkout, the ability to identify if there is specific product in the store. It's that old expression, know before you go, that helps to inform a shopper of, say, for instance, where a specific product may be. There are more retailers that are incorporating just analytics from a store flow standpoint, where consumers walking in the store, where do they tend to congregate, or where do they tend to stop when they stop? What are they viewing? What influences their purchase decisions? So there are a number of those store technologies that I think are absolutely areas that we'll continue to see growth in the future.
Has anything popped up that wasn't even on the list 2 to 3 years ago in terms of new technologies?
There are big data solutions that I think are relatively new to the list, only because these technologies weren't as mature as they are now. And in some cases, they didn't exist at all. And retailers are absolutely looking in those directions. Some retailers, while it's not a store technology, they're looking at solutions like, are there opportunities for voice assistance in a physical store? Are there opportunities for leveraging artificial intelligence like computer vision in physical stores? Now, very, very few retailers, in all fairness, are actually putting this in their plans, but it did come up as areas that retailers were considering in, say, the next 3 to 5 years.
For the longest time, I think the biggest, what everybody talked about with as online shopping and online sites were becoming larger and there were more of them, of people using the physical store to go in, look at the item, try the item on, and then go back to their computer and research and try to get the best price and not necessarily buy from the physical store. Is that as big of a theme now as it was just a couple of years ago? I just don't hear it that much anymore.
Yeah. I mean, well, you're describing basically what we called, or what used to be called, showrooming. And the interesting thing is that there is arguably as much reverse showrooming, where you see people going to an aggregator like an Amazon or an eBay and then deciding to go to a physical store to actually complete the transaction because they may be able to get it immediately, or you know, they just want that right then and there. So I think that you're absolutely right. And we don't hear it as much because the interplay is in many different directions. And I think that there was a prevailing myth that, oh my gosh, all the showrooming that was happening was related to Amazon. And what we actually saw when we did research around it was that there was as much showrooming that would happen on competitor sites. Like if it was as likely that a consumer was looking on the Home Depot site while in a Lowe's store, as they were looking at some online pure play. And it was as likely that a consumer would walk out and go purchase at another store locally, where maybe the price was better, the assortment was better, versus going online. So this interplay of different channels, different store offerings is very, very complicated. And what we have here is basically transparency, and consumers are pretty savvy to be wise enough to know that they have a number of different options online, offline, locally, as well as by mail to get what they want. And they look at all of those options and ultimately, you know, complete the transaction at the confluence of who has the best price with the best service with the best ability to get me the product quickly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Sadrina. So we talked earlier about killing this myth that retail is dying. You actually asked retailers if they were opening or closing stores. So what did they say?
Well, there is great data that says that they're actually in fact opening new stores. So the specific question was, do you plan to open new stores in 2018? And 55% of the retailers that responded to the survey said that in fact, yes, they are opening new stores. Another 24% there said that they're opening pop-up stores. And that compared to 31% that said that they were going to close some stores. Now, what that means is that net-net, there are many, many more retailers that are going to have more stores at the end of 2018 than fewer stores at the end of 2018. So 43% said that they'll have net more stores. 16% said that they'll have net fewer stores. So that's a good sign that the retailers that we surveyed should be larger in 2018 than at the beginning of at the end of 2018 versus at the beginning of 2018.
There are a lot of retailers that are formerly pure plays that are opening stores. We've got Warby Parker stores, we've got Amazon stores. What is the attraction for those retailers to get into the bricks and mortar business?
Yeah, for pure plays, it's an expression that the Chinese, it's become, you know, the Chinese will call O2O. It's like offline to online, and I think that it is only more recently making its way here stateside as something that's more commonplace. But yeah, it's basically these pure plays that have realized that it is really hard to gain mind share and market share online. And there is nothing better than to have a great physical manifestation of your brand in a mall where people are going to go shopping, or in some shopping destination like Soho, to help to build that brand. So that's why you see companies ranging from Rent the Runway to Stitch Fix to Warby and so many others actually opening stores. Where actually not Stitch Fix, Birchbox is what I was thinking of, opening stores that are physical manifestations of the online selling experience.
We hear a lot of talk about apps. Everybody, it seems like, in order to be considered, you know, hip or cool or relevant, you have to have an app. How about apps in retail? Are they pretty prevalent?
Well, I think a few years ago, apps were all the rage. And that was probably one of the most common questions we would get is, do I need an app? And what should my app look like? And what's the value of the app? And what the data here from State of Retailing Online really showed is that not a lot of traffic or sales are coming through mobile apps. And that's a big deal because I think it essentially validates not having an app if you choose not to have one. It's expensive to have an app. It can be very complicated from a design and development standpoint. It isn't always the best use of resources for a company, especially if the vast majority of your site visits to mobile are coming through your mobile-optimized website. So I think that what the data here suggests is that unless you are a company that has very, very frequent visitation from your shoppers and you have a really unique reason for providing an app, and that could be because you have special currency that you're providing to customers or you have a loyalty program that customers may check into frequently, it may not make a lot of sense. The specific data we had was that of the retailers that responded to the survey, only 5% of their online traffic was even coming through their mobile app, and only 4% of their sales were coming through their mobile app. So that almost suggests to me that it's not even worth it. It's best to just push those visits to your mobile optimized site and make that site as strong as it can be.
I read that almost a quarter of the respondents are going to be having at least one pop-up this year. Is that another trend that we're going to continue seeing go up?
It makes a lot of sense. The biggest challenge with pop-ups hasn't been retailer appetite for pop-ups. I mean, retailers would, I think, love to have more flexibility in their real estate if possible. The bigger issue with pop-ups has always been that the availability of space and the unwillingness of landlords to providing, you know, space in that format. As you well know, landlords love cash cows, and their ability to have tenants sign decades-long leases is a significant part of the retail or the real estate business model for commercial retail. And pop-ups basically blow that up. So when they offer it, it is very judiciously, often in non-traditional space. And that is going to be the bigger challenge is to find enough retail real estate that is well suited to a pop-up model.
You know, several years ago, I was speaking with a retailer and they were talking about some of the challenges that they were having with the online versus the store, and specifically in inventory. So somebody would be online, they'd see a red dress that they really liked. They were going to be downtown that next day, so they stopped by the store to get the red dress. They didn't have any red dresses in the store because they only sold the blue dresses. And this was becoming a very big problem. Is that still a problem out there?
Well, what you have is definitely a lack of, it sounds, I mean, that particular example is both a combination of a lack of consistency across channels, and then it sounds like there's also information asymmetry. So we can take each of those challenges separately. So from an information asymmetry standpoint, I think that retailers are getting a little bit better with a seamless one view of the inventory where they can tell not only what's in a distribution center that can be visible for an online shopper, but what's also in a given store. And for multi-brand retailers, they're actually getting to the point where they can actually see into their brand inventory too. So that's product that isn't even in their own distribution center. It's in another distribution center somewhere else. And I think that the next phase beyond that is, can you even see where your brand is distributed, maybe even at other stores? And there is a retailer, there's actually a shoe brand in Germany called Gabor that is piloting exactly that, is this complete seamless view of inventory across even some of their, you know, kind of individual retailers and letting some of the retailers have access to the inventory at other retailers, which is that's pretty wild. That's like giving a Walmart online shopper access to Target inventory. It may not be completely visible and it may be behind the scenes, but still, right now that's still unheard of. But so you have that inventory synchronization, which we are getting to. It's a work in progress. The other piece is that allocation, and the biggest advantage of the e-commerce channel is that you can have the endless aisle. Consumers expect that endless aisle, and you cannot have it in the physical store. But it is really, really important for the shopper experience to make that transparent. If you are going to the physical store, you should know before you go. There's no excuse for being told that a particular item is in the store and it's actually not there, not in this day and age. And if an item is online only, I think consumers do understand, but it should be highlighted as such. So you don't send somebody to the store expecting to see something and then you realize that that particular item is not even at that store.
Very good.
I want to back up 10 years, 15 years, whenever Soro started. We've seen a lot of changes in the retail industry, a lot of reimagining of how customers experience shopping. Two-part question. One, what has surprised you most over the last decade plus about Soro's findings? And then part two, pulling out your crystal ball, what kind of things do you think we're going to be asking in a few years?
What I have always liked about Soro is that it is remarkably prescient. And what I mean by that is that we would see certain trends, while there was still a lot of hype around them, things like, remember when everyone was talking about Facebook stores and thought that they were the next hot thing. I mean, well, retailers had told us, pretty early on that it was a non-starter. Things like flash sales, retailers again told us that they were essentially non-starters. But however, retailers would also tell us that they were leaning really, really heavily into the success of some of their social marketing strategies. Now, all of that, I think, remains a big question now, given so many of the issues that Facebook is facing. But that, I think, foretold, kind of the huge growth of Facebook. And we were able to see that there was going to be enormous growth, in the last few years with Facebook through that Soro data. So I think that it's great about helping to identify where there's hype and where there is actually traction. So I've really, really enjoyed seeing the results of this report every time it comes out because of that type of insight. At this moment in time, I think that there are a couple of big questions in retail. One set of questions we get is often about the role of Amazon in retail. And we are seeing a number of retailers looking at online marketplaces as potential avenues for customer acquisition and growth in the future. And that becomes interesting because it almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that Amazon grows stronger because retailers lean into it and empower Amazon to grow stronger. So it'll be interesting to see how some of that data continues to what that data looks like in the next, say, 12 to 24 months as well. The other area is a keen interest in artificial intelligence and machine learning. And this is one of those things that retailers have so many questions about, but they really have no idea how it's going to play out in their specific domains and if there are even any good use cases for AI or ML in their businesses. And the great irony is when you look at the strict definitions of AI or machine learning that some of my colleagues at Forrester have put together, some of these things have existed for a while. I mean, recommendation engines fall into the world of machine learning, and we've had those for over a decade and have done a pretty good job integrating them already onto e-commerce sites. So it seems that, that's a topic that will be of interest to retailers for many years to come. But, you know, it may not be as transformational as we think because we've already got some of the good stuff. And we and a lot of the promise of, say, like computer vision, you know, is not yet a reality for most retailers yet.
So, Jerita, this has been incredibly interesting, and I know that our listeners are getting a lot out of this. But, Sarah, if people want to see the actual report, where do they go to see it?
Yeah, you can go to nrf.com/soro, S-O-R-O.
And, Jerita, if they want to know more about the research that you're doing, where would they go online to learn that?
Yeah, they can go to Forrester.com and they can search for any of our retail reports. We have a blog at Forrester, and if anyone wants to follow me on Twitter and to hear some of the things that I like talking about, I'm available there at smulpuru, M-U-L-P-U-R-U.
That's great. So there's a part of the program that you don't know anything about, so you're just going to learn it right now, which is called Rapid Fire. We're going to come up with some questions, and we want you to answer it with the first thing that comes into your mind. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Sarah?
Beach or mountain?
Beach.
Best place you have traveled?
Turkey.
Favorite question to ask a retail CEO?
To Amazon or not.
Favorite comfort food?
Oatmeal.
Would you rather spend a year without weekends or a year without your cell phone?
A year without my cell phone.
So, Jerita, you did really, really well. I'm impressed. So
those are tricky.
Well, you got all the rest of it down. You did really well. So, Jerita, thank you again for being a guest on Retail Gets Real. We really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
And thank all of you for listening to another episode of Retail Gets Real. We're going to post more information about the topics we discussed today on our website, retailgetsreal.com, where you can also find links to other episodes. Sarah, as always, thank you.
As always, thank you.
All right, everyone. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Retail Gets Real, brought to you by NRF. For more information about the National Retail Federation, visit us online at nrf.com.